It's time for a deep dive on University of Portland basketball.
This is home for me, and so to be able to take on this challenge and bring the city in with the rest of the UP family, I'm very excited about that.
The inside story on the Pilots.
In order for us to get to where we want to go, we want to always make sure we protect our home court. We want to compete. We want to play harder than our opponent. We want to play together. Last thing, guys, let's enjoy the moment.
This is the Terry Porter Show, brought to you on 910 ESPN Portland by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. By U.S. Bank, Coca-Cola, by Nike, Alaska Airlines, GEICO, by AAA Oregon, and by Orthopedic Plus Fracture Specialists. Now here's the voice of the Pilots, Jason Swigard.
Good evening. Welcome in. Here with head coach Terry Porter for the next hour as we hit February and head down the home stretch to the conference tournament in Vegas. Didn't need to see the snow, though, this morning as I was coming out. Thought we were past all that. We get to February, we start thinking about spring, we start thinking about Vegas, and that caught me by surprise this morning.
Not good.
Well, we got a busy hour coming up for you. We'll recap a tough week last week with games against Santa Clara and St. Mary's. And as we look to the second half of the season, Pilots have played everybody else in conference once now, so we'll kind of take some stock both of the Pilots and well as get coach's thoughts on how this conference is shaping up with still three teams that are looking in position for NCAA tournament bids. 7:30, we got a special guest, the new volleyball coach at the University of Portland, Megan Burton. She was hired a few weeks ago, but we haven't had a chance to catch up with her, so she's going to give us a call at 7:30. We'll find out about how she's hoping to continue to advance the program that's come a long ways in the last few years, and her thoughts, her career as a player in the West Coast Conference, and now she's gotten into the coaching ranks and her excitement for that program moving forward. And then we'll preview the week coming up, BYU coming to the Chiles Center on Thursday night. It'll be mascot night there, 7 o'clock tip. And then Saturday at San Diego, another 7 o'clock game. So the return game's now starting to go. But, coaches, we look back to the weekend. Trip to St. Mary's, never an easy one. And they were just too good with their efficiency. They turned around Saturday and took BYU down to the wire at Provo, as though those two teams are now tied for second place. But 86-64 in that one, they shot the lights out from three-point range, getting 40 up, making 18. They shot over 53% from the floor offensively and doing it with their two main guys, Jordan Ford and Malik Fitz, setting up everybody else.
Yeah, well, those guys really, we had some slippers in some of our coverage. We lost those guys early and didn't do a good job of closing out and really trying to make those guys put the ball on the floor. And they got some good rhythm threes. They hit a couple early, and it just kind of fed, everybody else kind of fed off of. I mean, 18 make threes, I think that was a high for us to give up for the year. And we knew coming in they were one of the best three-point shooting in our conference as well as in the nation. So something we talked about, something we really tried to do in regards to just not giving those guys those kind of looks. And, again, we had some breakdowns and some slippage in those areas, which allowed those guys to get some early looks. And they just kind of got fed off those and was able to continue to knock them down.
On the bright side, offensively, and this will be a theme throughout the week, both that and Santa Clara, Tahir Diabate coming off that career-high game at Pepperdine, but followed it up with 18 and 6 and a career-high tying four-block shots at St. Mary's, and then 14 points, 8 boards, and a block shot against Santa Clara. And really, he seemed to be able to maintain a high energy now at both ends of the floor, really going after a lot of rebounds. He's getting hands on a lot of balls. And, you know, the next piece is making sure he's pulling all of those in that he can get his fingertips on. But the effort, we saw him in that Santa Clara game, diving on the floor late in the game when the team was behind late, certainly something that you hope kind of is a little infectious with the rest of the group here down the stretch.
Yeah, I think he's, each game, each day, he's gotten better. Within the game itself, I think he's done a much better job of reading double teams and really understanding how he can try to break them and score, or just break him to the point where he can get the ball out to the weak side for our guys can really try to have a situation where we have numbers on that weak side. And it's his ability to really rebound and have play with a great motor. That has definitely turned up these last 3 to 5 games, and that's great to see. So now he's just, you know, as he faces more opponents, you know, it's what they're going to throw at him. Are they going to allow him to, you know, still go one-on-one? I think our next two opponents really haven't shown up to this point a lot of double-team schemes, but they may. You just know, you never know. But I think these are going to give him opportunities to really have a chance to, again, continue to find rhythm, continue to play with poise, continue to play with confidence, and continue to put that type of offensive productivity out, which is going to help us, you know, obviously to have that inside attack, which we've all been talking about having, and now we got to get the outside going and try to get, you know, two or three guys that can really lift us offensively.
Well, the outside attack starting to come back to Isaiah White a little bit. He had 17 against St. Mary's, and then followed that up with 15 against Santa Clara. And a combination, he was using his aggressiveness, the bounce that he had, getting all the way to the rim, the little mid-range game, to get guys to back off of him and allow him some better looks from three maybe later in those games. But good to see the mentality, that aggressiveness back that was escaped him there for a little bit in the middle of the season.
Yeah, Isaiah is a different type of player when he is having an aggressive mindset. He puts the ball on the floor. He gets to the rim because he has the athleticism and the bounce to finish around the rim and to draw fouls. And so that's something I think that was definitely missing for some games there. And it's nice to see him turn the corner now, understand that, and get back to really being aggressive. I mean, we encourage guys to shoot threes when there's some penetration or in transition and we have chances, double teams, or however we get them on a clear rhythm threes. But when it's not, it's about shot faking and trying to get to the rim and try to draw fouls and really put the heat on the defense. And the last two games, he's done a great job of doing that and playing that style. It kind of gone back to the early part of the season where he's really have maintained and couldn't pressure not only on the perimeter on defensive teams, but also getting to the rim and getting in the paint.
Well, you mentioned the threes, and unfortunately for the week, for the Pilots, that it kind of went missing on them again. 5 of 18 against St. Mary's, 4 for 20 against Santa Clara. And the one thing we noticed, both those two teams have their wings a lot of length, with guys like Malik Fitz and Tanner Krebs. Justice and Mitchell for Santa Clara of note. And we've seen with those teams that are able to be long and rangy on the perimeter with the wings, it really has taken an effect. How do you work with them now, knowing you're going to start seeing these teams a second time? How do you combat that in terms of getting the guys offensively doing some different options off the actions maybe to find where the open spots are going to be?
Well, yeah, you mentioned it. The size and the wingspan and the length has bothered us a little bit. We got to do some more things in regards to, you know, setting more screens, having them come off screens, getting those guys, those defenders maybe trailing where you have a chance to turn the corner and get in the gap and open some opportunities. Again, I go back to our defense has been whenever we were able to stop opponents, make their possessions be one shot and done, then we can get out in open court and we get more threes up, more clean rhythm threes. And, you know, our defense has really struggled the last couple of games with teams now, we're taking the ball out the net and teams are shooting, you know, scoring 80 points, shooting above close to 50% or the high 40s. And it's become more and more difficult in the half court to get those kind of easy rhythm clean threes that we were getting earlier the year. And I think that, you know, we get back to stopping opponents and getting out in open court where we have numbers and we have the ability to drive it, draw the defenders, and then kick it out on the perimeter for good shot opportunities.
So Santa Clara or St. Mary's with the 86-64 win, coming back home, taking on Santa Clara, they came out. Keyshawn Justice was the guy who hit his first five threes And again, a 6'6", 6'7", guy who can get his shot off kind of over the top of guys. And it's set up from there. And Josip Brankić didn't do much. He was kept under control. But again, it was kind of the other guys there where he was able to set them up, use, you know, with the defense paying attention to him to open things up for his teammates. Five Broncos in double figures, pretty even scoring distribution. And the other piece that we've seen, the turnovers, big early. I think it was 12 or 13 in that first half. Going and looking back, what was never in sync for you with the crew on Saturday?
I think, first of all, we just have not done a good job of being sharp to start games. We've offensively, I say, if we do have good opportunities, good possessions, we seem to go those couple possessions where we can't convert at the rim. We get a good shot, can't make a layup here and there, 2-3 in a row. We get really good quality possessions. And then we allow our opponents to get back and get some easy looks. And then we just can't quite stop the trend with they getting shots. And then we turn it over. We turn it over 3 or 4 or 5 times in a row. And teams are able to get out. And it's very difficult on live turnovers to try to get your defense back and get them set. And teams get out and score easy layups or wide open threes, and it puts us behind the eight ball right then and there. And so we just got to, you know, we're showing the turnovers, we're talking about them. We just got to do a better job, again, of settling in early offensively, really move the ball. And really, you know, always go. Sometimes I've said we got to go deep into the shot clock if we have to really make sure our possessions, our ball is going side to side. We don't shoot any quick shots, and we don't give our opponents a chance to get out and run in open space with numbers.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the specifics of that practice in this week. Also want to get your thoughts now that played every team in the conference once. We'll go through the standings, see how things look there, but get your perspective on how this conference is shaping up as we start to focus our attention on the conference tournament in Las Vegas at the 1st of March. Still to come, 7:30, new volleyball coach at the University of Portland, Megan Burton, going to call in, and we'll ask her about where she hopes to take this program, now taking it over after being an assistant the last couple of seasons. And we'll look ahead to games against BYU and San Diego coming up later this week. Still time for your calls or questions as well. 877-535-9100 is the number. If you've got a question or a thought for head coach Terry Porter, is here with us till the top of the hour. This is the Terry Porter Coaches Show on 910 ESPN Portland.
Back to Cossey, hands to Edie, gives him a screen. Edie with a side saddle dribble, had it slapped away and stolen by Chase Adams. On the run, he's got Isaiah White out in front of him, goes right to the 10 and lays it in with a left hand.
You're listening to the Terry Porter Show on 910 ESPN Portland. With the coach, here's your host, Jason Swigart.
What do you think the MLB
back here,
should...
back here with head coach Terry Porter as we recap the week, start to look ahead to next week. And games against BYU and San Diego. And as we mentioned, new volleyball head coach Megan Burton going to join us coming up at 7:30. But coach, as we get into the week here, we've seen, you know, midway point essentially, or the point at which the Pilots have played everybody once. And you look at the conference numbers. And Tahira Diabate, now the leading scorer for the team. JoJo is right behind him. They're both just shy of 12 points a game. Isaiah White, just over 10 points a game. So those the big three. Malcolm is there just under 10 points, and hopefully he'll be able to have an opportunity to get back maybe the last couple weeks of February to see where that knee is at. But with those guys there offensively, is that enough to try and build around, or do you need these guys to even take on more offensive responsibility for you to make it easier for the rest of the guys to have easy opportunities?
Yeah, you know, for us, you know, coaches, we talk a lot about how we can increase our productivity, our offensive output. I think we need to do more. I think we've, and I think we only hit in conference 70 twice, maybe. And then we got 60, and then we got a 50-point game, I think, up against Pacific. So I think that's something where we gotta just be able to regularly get into the 70s. And I think that'll put us in a position to be able to win games, you know, and put ourselves to be there down the stretches of games. But right now, we got to try to find, you know, another score, consistent score, and try to have, you know, need those guys, those three guys to maybe go up, you know, 3 to 4 points, and then have somebody else, maybe Taki can put that, give us that extra, maybe when Malcolm comes back, give us a double-digit leader as well. And I think, you know, D's made that stride. JoJo's, you know, has been given an opportunity. When he's a starter, he's definitely, productivity definitely goes up. Isaiah's really turned the corner, get back to where he was playing early in the year, where he was having a really good balance of perimeter attack with wide open shots, but also driving it to the rim and being aggressive. And then who is that other scorer going to be? Is it Taki? Is it Malcolm? You know, I don't know. And we just have to kind of continue to put him in positions to try to, you know, get good looks. But also, I think at times we've talked about picking up our pace. And obviously, we've done a good job in stretches where we've done that, and we haven't turned it over. And then we've done a good job sometimes where we've turned it over too much. But a lot of times, when you look at the games that we've had a lot of turnovers, there haven't been games where we've really tried to push the tempo. I think for the most part, when we tried to push the tempo and get Chase and Quincy and everybody kind of to run the floor and get out, we've done a pretty good job of limiting our turnover. So we just got to get back to that mix of, you know, first stopping our opponents. I think that's a key factor. You can't expect to be up tempo and get a lot of reps and get a lot of attempts if you have to take the ball out the net a lot. It's just not going to happen. And so we got to get back to stopping guys, stopping people, and then we can get out, and then we can have numbers, and then I can kind of feed off the opportunity to try and attack before defenses are set.
Well, and I think the other good week, we had so many of the last previous 3 or 4 weeks where barely enough guys to practice, and they're coming in and out of the lineup. But now, other than Malcolm, you've got, you know, everybody there available. You know who it is. How important will that be for this week of preparation, and how much can you really focus on those finer points and get some things accomplished?
Well, you can get some consistency when you start having everybody there. Like you said, we had guys who were sick and then guys that was hurt as well. And it limits your ability to really time on the floor together and get some type of rhythm, timing offensively. Do the things you need to do defensively really help you. And so hopefully, you know, this week and going forward, we won't have guys out because of illness or guys out because of injuries. We can get back to having a full squad to really get after it in practice and really work on the things we need to work on defensively and limit some of our breakdowns, as well as, you know, pick back up our offensive attack and get back to having good opportunities to score, you know, more points and having a chance to really get some offensive rhythm going.
Well, you look at the conference. Gonzaga sitting there at the top, 9-0. They're 23-1 overall, ranked number 2 in the country, and appear to be a lock for another number 1 seed if they can hold on. Then St. Mary's and BYU after their game Saturday, BYU got them. They're tied for second at 6-3. You got a log jam in the middle there. Santa Clara Pacific, San Francisco Pepperdine are all 5-4, and then Loyola Marymount 2-7. Portland with San Diego at 1-8. What's your sense of the conference overall now, having been through it once, and how good top to bottom, how deep maybe this conference is compared to some previous years?
Well, I think in previous years it may have been a little bit more top heavy. I think now it's a lot from top to bottom. I mean, playing on the road now is very difficult. I think it's not to say it wasn't difficult. I think it's more difficult now because of teams that, you know, lower five teams are still very good home teams. And so it's a challenge for everybody to go on the road and try to win games. And I think you're seeing that now. You're seeing that balance. And those teams are able to really perform well at home. And so for us, we just, you know, we let a couple get away from us at home. And unfortunately, when you do that, it becomes very difficult because when we know the challenges there are when you go on the road. And it becomes that much more difficult to try to make sure you're playing at a high clip on the road. You're not turning it over. You're not giving up easy points. And then you're really being efficient in regards to your offensive execution.
You look at the top players, who's going to be, you know, there for West Coast Conference Player of the Year, and the list keeps seeming to get bigger. Filip Petrusev was named the West Coast Conference Player of the Week this week, getting Gonzaga out of some scares and ride it with Killian Trilly going down. Jordan Ford is leading the conference in scoring. Jaleel Tripp is second in scoring, first in rebound. Malik Fitz, and you got Colby Ross and the Edwards brothers. Jake Toulson and TJ Haws have been picking up the slack with Yoeli Childs in and out of the lineup. Who's impressed you the most so far throughout this conference, and a guy that you're just kind of, you know, scratching the head going, man, if we do that, he's going to do that. But if we cover that, then that's open.
Yeah, I think we've done a pretty good job on some of the guys. Like Ross, I thought, you know, Isaiah did a good job on him. The Edward boards got a little bit loose on us. But Petro, the kid, the Golden Gonzaga, has done a really good job. I mean, I think he's just played with good poise, really been efficient in the post. Obviously, if he has Tilly, he's a different, that's a different animal. But, you know, I think without Tilly, he's had more of the burden on his shoulders in regards to scoring, and he's been able to take that and still lead them to victories. And so for him, he's been the most impressive in regards to, you know, you have that stature of being the top dog. Everybody's have, you have a target on your back and everybody's coming. You're going to give everybody the best shot. Thought they've gone into some hostile situations, San Francisco and places where they've been, you know, 1-2 possession games and they've really executed, and he's been the one offensively that's really kind of carried them through what they need to do offensively. So he's been the one, I think, that was kind of, you know, had a little bit of a separation. You know, Childs Young, I mean, Childs, you can't tell. He's, you know, he's missed some games with his finger. He's been a handful for the Pilots. I can tell you that much. He's averaging like 20 and 15 against us in the short times we faced him.
Oh, no question. And even he's still, you know, their leading scorer and rebounder in conference play. He's just, he's missed four games with the finger. He missed the first nine with the NCAA sanctions. And he'll be a tough cover here on Thursday night, as he always is. Looking like three teams could get into the tournament, St. Mary's and BYU. I think BYU's up to 26 in the net ratings. St. Mary's still at 33. 2-point loss on the road at BYU is not going to drop you very far in anybody's eyes. So assuming they don't have any catastrophic losses before they would face each other, Gonzaga, in the conference tournament, a big showing for the conference. But I would imagine there's not too many teams that would be anxious to see BYU or St. Mary's as that 9 or 10 seed going into the first round.
No, they can, you know, they could really give you some matchup nightmares. I mean, different in so many ways with BYU to want to play more up tempo and has a lot of 3-point shooters and have the interior attack as well, where St. Mary's just going to execute you to death. I mean, they're just so efficient in how they go about executing their things offensively. And they have shown us that they can knock down threes, but also at the rate, you know, 50%. Overall and 50% from three. So both of those teams that could give, you know, could win easy two games in the tournament if the matchup's right.
And if Tilly comes back completely healthy, it was just an ankle he rolled this last one. So I think once the swelling goes down and the pain goes away, he should be right back in it. Is this a Gonzaga team that you think could all get all the way to a Final Four depending on the draw?
Yeah. I mean, I think they definitely have enough of the weapons. Again, what do you look for a Final Four team? What's the makeup of them? Obviously, experience is a factor in the backcourt. They have that perimeter shooting. They have that interior, you know, an ability to score. They're probably not as good rim protection as they were last year with Hachimura and Clark. Those guys were really great athletes and could block shots from anywhere. But they still have the size and guys that can block shots, just not the athleticism. So They're not a team that turn it over a lot. And so I think, you know, they don't probably have as many three-point shooters as they had in last year's team, but they really do a good job, again, of executing their offense. And they attack you, you know, with their interior scoring and their perimeter scoring.
Well, we know the Pilots have their work cut out for them down the second half, and the West Coast Conference tournament should be a fun one to watch here this March. Looks like new volleyball coach Megan Burton calling in, so we're going to take a break and look forward to chatting with her. She takes over the Pilot volleyball program after assisting the last couple of seasons as we head down the home stretch here with head coach Terry Porter, the Terry Porter Coaches Show on 910 ESPN Portland.
Adams tips it to himself, but his no-look pass goes into a crowd, and it's the Broncos that come out with it. Long outlet to Williams in the left corner. Throws it behind Bediako, and Chase Adams has it. He's got White streaking down on the angle for the two-handed flush.
The inside story on Portland Pilots basketball. This is the Terry Porter Show on 910 ESPN Portland. Here again is Jason Swigard.
Here with head coach Terry Porter. We'll preview the two games coming up this week. BYU Thursday at the Chiles Center, and then Saturday at San Diego. Tickets for that Thursday game. It'll be mascot night, so Wally's invited a bunch of his mascot friends over to the Chiles Center, and they'll have all sorts of activities for you. Tickets available at the box office, 503-943-GO-UP, or you can go online, portlandpilots.com/tickets. Also, the women's team will be hosting San Francisco Saturday, February 15th, and if you purchase a ticket to the game and then RSVP to John Brooks with his email, that's brooksj@up.edu, you can secure a spot in their post-game kids clinic following the game. That'll be with the women's basketball team after the Dons. So you want to email brooksj@up.edu for more information on that one. And that'll be President's Day weekend. But very glad, though, right now to have taken a few minutes to call us, our first time to chat with her since she's been named the head volleyball coach. It's Megan Burton. It was hired back on January the 15th. Congratulations, and thanks for joining us here this evening.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on the show.
Hi, Terry.
Hello. Coach, how you doing?
Great. How are you guys
doing? Great. We're doing well.
We're doing well. I know people are obviously that have been watching the team over the last couple of years familiar with you. You've been an assistant with them, but maybe take everybody back through the process, the decision to come to Portland after a playing career at St. Mary's and assisting some other places, and then the process and what you're hoping to do now that you've taken over as the head coach.
Yeah. So as you guys already mentioned, I played at St. Mary's, and so I was well acquainted with University of Portland. And I actually knew Brent Crouch really well when he came to UP. He was one of my mentors while I was a Gale, and he loved it. And so last year, UP was interested in hiring me on as an assistant coach, and Brent was the first person I called, and he was just super positive about the Portland community and where he was pushing the program forward, and it made me want to come and be a part of the pilot program. So now it's been almost a year that I've been on UP campus, and just loving it and extremely blessed to continue this journey with the Pilots, and excited to move forward and see what we can do.
Well, I know, you know, when Coach Crouch took this program over, it was coming off a pretty dismal season, and what he was able to do and transform it into 20 wins and getting into the women's volleyball NIT or the equivalent there. Has shown what the potential for this program is, and I'm sure he shared that with you. Where do you take over now, and what's sort of the next steps, the immediate steps that you need to get going this year to keep that progression moving forward?
Yeah, really lucky. The WCC is amazing as far as the caliber of talent for women's volleyball in particular. And so just with that, it's really attracted a high level of recruits and just extremely high level volleyball. And so with that, just the recruiting side, we're still in the quiet period right now, but in about 2 weeks, I head out and I'll be trying to get some, you know, all Americans to come play at UP. So the recruiting side of things for sure is first on my radar. We've got some slots to fill. We lose Shayla Heft and Katie Barker, who were big time middle blockers for us, and they provided a ton of offense. And so we've got some great 2020 recruits coming in next fall, and I'm trying to find some more teammates for them. So that's the first thing on my to-do list. Definitely hit the recruiting trail running and get some great people, great students, and some high-level volleyball players to come join us.
Coach, share with us your recruiting philosophies. You know, today's landscape, the portal is so important. I wouldn't know mm-hmm. if there's JUCO volleyball athletes, student athletes as well. Just share us. It's a, you know, more high school. You want to get some maturity. Well, you want to try to get transfers. Share with us how you're thinking about trying to build your roster and build your recruiting classes as you go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Terry, you bring up a good point about the transfer portal now. And so we're going to be good as far as covering all areas. We're still going to recruit really hard from the high school and from the club scene to be able to get girls in here and develop them for 4 years. I really like that. But we've also got to do our due diligence and make sure that we're scanning the transfer portal to be able to bring in someone that's already played at the college level for 2 years. That, as we know, is invaluable experience. So we are already doing a ton of work on the transfer portal. And then a new scene that the volleyball in particular hasn't necessarily gone down this route, but UP Athletics has. Is the international side. International volleyball is amazing, and there's a lot of good talent out there, and it's something that we feel that we can capitalize on. So, we want to make sure that we're good on all fronts.
Chatting here with the new women's head volleyball coach, Megan Burton, as she takes over the program. You mentioned Shayla Heft. You'll have to replace, but some good news for her, along with her teammate Carrie Williams. They're going to participate in the 2020 Women's National Team tryout for college players. How important is it on the recruiting scene to be able to tell future recruits, hey, not only are you going to have an opportunity to compete here collegiately, but there's bigger opportunities for you if you come and you can facilitate, whether it's playing professional later or playing for a national team?
Mm-hmm. It just opens doors from the recruiting side to show them that we're going to support not only their endeavors for excellence in the classroom and as people, but specifically in this sport. And so I'm not sure if this is the first time that UP Volleyball is sending athletes, but it's something that both of those two individuals have earned their top scores in the conference. And we're just really excited for them to get exposure at a national level. And we've been really fortunate. Brent Crouch, when he was here, he kind of opened the doors to volleyball after college. And so we've had several student athletes graduate and move on to go play very successful careers professionally. Maybe something that they were not aware of as far as the opportunities for women's volleyball post-graduation, but something that recent graduates have really taken advantage of. And so we're going to continue to educate our student athletes while they're here, while they're striving for excellence, and just let them know that there is opportunity for them to play at the next level once they're done with their college careers. And so that's just kind of the first step for both Shayla and Carrie, is going to compete at the Olympic Training Center against the best of the best. And we're really proud of them. They've earned this opportunity, and we know that they're going to do great over there.
Well, and not only recruiting players, as you mentioned, but as you're moving from the assistant spot to the head coaching position, that opens up an assistant spot. How does it go recruiting the coaching staff, and how you want to put that together for the season?
Yeah. Well, first off, I just have to say how grateful and how blessed I am to have both Dylan and Justice staying on with me. They have worked so hard for this program and really supported me in this transition. And so extremely blessed to have both of those two still on board. But moving forward, yeah, we're looking to fill my old position and find a really top-notch person that's so important to me to come in and be a part of this Portland volleyball family, and then bring with them a ton of experience. I'm learning as a head coach, and I want someone that's going to come and bring new ideas and that's going to challenge me and challenge this program. And, someone that's going to bring a fresh set of eyes, a new perspective. I welcome that. I want that. And a lot of experience recruiting. I love recruiting. It's my bread and butter, but, if we can get someone in here that is just as passionate about it as I am, then that's my goal. So good person and top recruiter, a lot of experience. It's what we're looking for right now.
Coach, I have a question in regards to your coaching staff. And obviously I've been down that road on so many levels in regards to trying to build a coaching staff. Are you going to look, you mentioned some experience is important. Are you looking to give, you know, each assistant an offensive role, a defensive role, and you kind of oversee all that, or you just kind of just looking for based on their own individual strengths? What's your early thoughts on building that staff out?
Yeah, I think, Terry, the best way for me to talk about that moving forward is mainly to see what the strengths of each individual is once I put together this staff. And so one of the best things about the three that I currently have, including myself, is we're volleyball coaches. And that means that we can coach every skill. That means that we can coach the offense and the defensive side of things. I'm not worried about that whatsoever. As far as what I'm looking for in that candidate, it's more good person, recruiting knowledge. And then once they get here, based off of our strengths, finding what best fits for the four of us moving forward. Obviously, I come from a big defensive background, so I love that. That's kind of my bread and butter as a middle blocker and blocking coach at the most recent universities I've worked at. But if someone comes in here and they're better at blocking and defense than me, then, hey, I want us to be the best that we can be. So definitely flexible on the roles. Just want to put us in the best position to be successful.
Well, I know that there's been some buzz in recent years, and everybody's excited for you to continue that and take them further. We wish you the best of luck, and can't wait to see the squad out there come. Boy, it's late August when you guys start now that regular season.
Yeah.
New women's volleyball coach Megan Burton, kind enough to join us here. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes for us. We hope to see you there on campus in between recruiting trips, and say hi, and then good luck on the season upcoming.
Thank you so much, guys. Thanks for having me, and go Pilots.
There you go.
There you go. Go Pilots. Thanks so much to Megan Burton. I know how excited she was. She was actually down there in Hawaii.
Yes.
I think she was visiting some family after the season, and I think the interview process had started down there when we were there for the Diamondhead. Mm-hmm. We bumped into her a couple of times, and she always had a big smile on her face and was really excited for this opportunity. So hopefully, WCC is a tough volleyball conference.
Yeah, it is. Really tough.
When you've got especially places, Pepperdine and San Diego and LMU, where it's kind of an institution in Southern California, they're playing year-round indoor outdoor, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, in some ways it's like the basketball. You know, yep. You got the top three who's been there and had well established traditions and been there going to the tournaments, and you know, their tournament selection is a little bit different, but it's still very difficult.
Yeah.
And you know, but she's been excited about this opportunity. You can see her smiling and really excited about, you know, intermixing with the student athletes and really getting them going. And so I'm excited for her and excited for her journey.
You know, about don't forget BYU, that's been perennially a top five volleyball squad, too. They're still in the West Coast Conference. Speaking of BYU, the men's basketball team visiting the Child Center on Thursday. a return game. We'll figure out what went wrong in the first 6 minutes there, the first time these two teams got together, and hopefully what the Pilots can do to overcome that little different approach to it. Yoeli Childs will be on the floor for this one. He wasn't in the first one. How that changes the dynamic, and then a preview as well of San Diego for Portland on Saturday as we wrap things up with head coach Terry Porter. It's the Terry Porter Coaches Show here on 910 ESPN Portland.
Justice beyond the arc. Now Brankage lobbed down to Mitchell. Blocked from behind by Quincy Farabee. Great recovery. Outlet. JoJo goes at Brankage. Off the glass and got it to go.
You're listening to the Terry Porter Show on 910 ESPN Portland. With the coach, here's your host, Jason Swigart.
Thanks again to Megan Burton for spending a few minutes with us. And we share her excitement as she gets started as the head coach of the volleyball program there. Here with head coach Terry Porter, wrapping up the hour. Another busy, tough week. Starting Thursday, BYU comes to the Child Center. It'll be mascot night. The trip to Provo did not go well. 15-0 run from BYU to start it. It was 24-2, 6 minutes in. And then just one of those uphill battle games. Again, you've talked about the slow starts for this team, but looking back on it, and they didn't have Yoeli Childs. He had the finger injury there, so they kind of had a different lineup and a different look. And in between Haas and Toulson, they were going 90 miles an hour, just wanted to run up and down even faster maybe than the Pilots wanted to play. Second time around, what are the keys that you're focusing on with the guys this week in practice to be ready for them?
Well, I think for us, we'll show them that little stretch, but we also show them the stretch what we got. We went on a run on ourselves and what worked for us. And I think that's going to give them some insight on how important it is for us to play at both ends of the court. Again, we were not ready early on. They came out and they really kind of, you know, punched us in the mouth, so to speak, with their pace and moving so quickly. We just wasn't locked down in our positions to really – it was able to impact anything and disrupt their rhythm offense. And that offense is a rhythm offense. And so you have to disrupt them a little bit and not give them, again, they got some clean look threes. That seemed to be the trend that we do not, Don done a good job on the road. And then we turn it over. So that combination of giving up good threes and turning it over has really been not a good formula for us on the road.
Man.
And so we got to do a better job. And now we get a chance to play them at our place, but we know they're still going to be a very difficult challenge. But we're excited for it. We're excited for us having them in our house and having an opportunity to really just come out to a good start. That's going to be the key. We just got to make sure we come off to a good start and maintain that and make it a game.
That was a game. Theo Akuba, his double-double, 10 points, 10 rebounds, as D was having a hard time working inside against Colby Lee and some of the more physical big men that BYU was throwing at him. You expect D to maybe have a different approach, but if you can get something like that from Theo again, and might even the possibility of playing two bigs if they go to a really big lineup in that game, hopefully gives you some options there.
Yeah, I mean, I think D and Theo both would have, although Theo may have a little bit more of a challenge guarding Childs on the perimeter. I think D can guard him out on the perimeter and in the post. But, no, it was nice to see Theo have that kind of game, coming out game. And I think, you know, he's kind of turning the corner. He had the flu, and he's just trying to get his game legs back. And, you know, hopefully he can get some good prep this week and feel good about the BYU game because of, you know, that was the last game he had a chance to shine, so to speak, and, you know, just have some good vibes and be able to come out and play with a good energy and a good focus and give us a big lift.
And defensively, BYU still shooting 42% from three-point range overall, one of the top three-point shooting teams. It was Zach Selyus off the bench who didn't miss. Again, another kind of a role guy for him, but with all the attention going to Toulson and TJ Haas, that was the guy that kept getting open for him. How do you combat that defensively this time, knowing that Nixon, all those guys, if they're given wide open looks, they're more than capable of knocking them down?
I think that game we didn't do as good a job we need to do on guarding the ball. I think it became too quickly that we got breakdowns for whoever was on the ball. and we got into rotations or got ourselves out of position when it came to, trying to be in a position to really go out and contest the three-point shooters. And so we got to do a better job of understanding that, getting in our positions early, and then really controlling that ball handler, making sure that he is going more east-west as opposed to north-south and downhill, and taking away those early looks for those role players who are just out there just waiting for the opportunity to knock down shots.
Then Saturday at the Jenny Craig Pavilion down at San Diego, another 7 o'clock tip. And the first game here, first half, was nip and tuck, kind of the game that we expected. And then the second half, San Diego just got going from outside. Another guy off the bench, Jared Rodriguez, had 17 to lead them. He hit 3 of 4 threes. Joey Calcaterra got loose. They were 10 of 22 from three-point range. Where did things break down there against a San Diego team that hadn't really been known for its shooting coming in?
Well, yeah, for us offensively, we just couldn't muster up enough offensive punch in the second half. I think that had to do something to do with us just maintaining, staying in striking distance for if we got it down the stretch, we could kind of take it over, turn it and take over. But no, they got some guys, made some timely shots. And again, somebody who was unexpected, not really one of their leading scorers, step up and have a night. And we just didn't do a good job on him. We've gotten to do a better job on guys that really hadn't had a big offensive output night against us. And then all of a sudden we face him and one of those guys just have a night and they have, 10 or 12 points above their season average. And that's a lot of points to be given up to someone who's not accustomed to having that type of impact. And, to their credit, they were put themselves in the right position. But we got to do a better job of making sure those guys don't have those kind of nights. And then we got to, second half, down the stretches of games, we got to have guys make shots and make plays for us.
Taku LaFerrinson didn't play in that game. I think it was the sternum at that point that had him out. But he seems like, especially against the San Diego team, one, he'll be a better matchup on some of those wing guys for you. But two, this seems like a game he might be able to get his offense going.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, he's been somebody for us offensively that's really given us just on the floor in regards to spacing and the opponents having to really respect his three-point shot. And hopefully he can definitely, with his size, match up better with those guys. More important, give us an offensive punch. Early in the year when he would come off the bench and give us those two or three knockdown threes, it would seem to ignite everybody else. And just like anything, one three goes in and then somebody else knocks a three and it just comes, something that everybody kind of just lights up and has a domino effect in our three-point shooting.
Well, the San Diego game will be important, trying to get a leg up, tied with San Diego in the standings right now, trying to get into that 8-9 up to the 7 seed with the conference tournament about a month away. Mm-hmm. So, again, a busy week. Thursday night, tickets available for BYU at the box office, 503-943-GO-UP. Or at portlandpilots.com/tickets. It'll be mascot night, so all of Wally's friends will be there having some fun and having a little party there for everybody. So we encourage you to come out, see us there. And then Saturday at San Diego. Both those games, 7 p.m. tip, so we'll have pregame for you at 6:30 right here on 910 ESPN Portland. Thanks once again to Megan Burton. Joining us, the new head volleyball coach there for the Pilots. Thanks, as always, to Jeff Rust, our producer. Coach, good luck this week.
Thank you, Jason.
We'll see you Thursday night there when BYU comes to town.
Sounds good.
Hopefully it won't snow.
Yeah,
don't need
exactly.
Snow.
Keep
no
that
snow.
Away.
Keep that
no
away.
Snow.
That'll do it for us. We'll turn you back over to ESPN Radio here this evening. For head coach Terry Porter, I'm Jason Swigard. Have a very good night.
This has been the Terry Porter Show with the head basketball coach of the Portland Pilots. Tonight's show was brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, by U.S. Bank, Coca-Cola, by Nike, Alaska Airlines, GEICO, by AAA Oregon, and by Orthopedic Plus Fracture Specialists. Join us for University of Portland basketball all season long on 910 ESPN Portland.